Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Shinneman, Director of Legal Analytics and Review at Jurnov. Welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we bring together national speakers to talk about critical issues in electronic discovery and records management at a price everyone can afford, which is free, and at a time when people are interested in the topic, regardless of where they're located, because you can just download it when you want to hear it. Today, we're talking about e-discovery in medical records, and I got to say, this is an exciting topic, frankly, because there really isn't much out there on this topic nationally. I think this is an emerging area, and it's always fun to dive into new topics on ESI Bytes. It's also a pleasure to have Karen Roberts on another show with me. We've done some shows in the past. Karen's background is she's got over a dozen years of electronic discovery and litigation support experience at law firms and in in-house legal departments. She's currently a litigation support specialist at Hall, Render, Killian, Heath, and Lyman in Indianapolis, Indiana. She's responsible for coordinating all litigation support technology services for the firm, including in-house processing and production of electronic discovery. She also provides consultation on electronic records management and electronic evidence handling. Prior to joining Hall Render, Karen was the corporate electronic discovery coordinator for Eli Lilly and Company, where she developed records management and electronic information best practices, as well as managing large-scale electronic discovery projects. She's been recognized for her practical and specialized advice and her ability to develop realistic strategies and executable project plans for proactive electronic information management systems. She's a frequent speaker and active in the litigation support industry through her memberships of the Sedona Conference Working Group, Electronic Document Retention and Production, Working Group 1, International Legal Technology Association, the Association of Litigation Support Professionals, and Women in eDiscovery. Karen was also involved in a cutting-edge CLE I offered in Minneapolis when she was with Eli Lilly when we tried to play my eDiscovery project management board game in a live setting, Discovery Land, and combine that with a national panel of experts talking about issues raised in the game. And let's say it was an interesting experiment, which I never got to try again, unfortunately, but I think it had potential. Karen, thanks for joining us again.
Sure.
And
pleasure.
Let's start the show here. This is the first show, Karen, I've done since I've gotten back from Sun and Rum and from the Dominican Republic for a week. That's why there were no shows last week. They wouldn't have been very good shows, or they might have been great. I don't know. but you know, I like to ask everyone on the show when they start off, how did you first become interested or involved in electronic discovery?
Well, Carl, first I'd like to say thank you for inviting me to speak on this topic. You know, over 10 years ago, I was involved in a pharmaceutical class action products liability suit, and our client was a GroupWise shop, so collection and processing of email data was a challenge due to the proprietary nature of the platform. And at that time, there was just so little knowledge, experience, or even information in the vendor space or in the legal industry about how to do electronic discovery and how to do it well. So we had to pretty much figure it out on our own. And we ended up forwarding responsive email to a legal email box and then printed it from there. So it was pretty crude how we had started out doing electronic discovery, and it really hasn't been that long ago when we did that. So it's knowing that the technology exists today and that converting electronic to electronic for discovery purposes is really just we've gone so far from where we were just a short time ago. So in many respects, I think the healthcare organizations of today are just now beginning to experience that firsthand. They've been somewhat insulated from a lot of that electronic discovery requests. In their favor, though, is the wealth of expertise that's readily available across the industry today.
Yeah, it's amazing how, you know, for all of us that have been involved in the industry for a while, it's not so far from when we felt like we were building the pyramids by hand.
Yeah.
Now we're flying fighter jet pilots, you know, fighter jets.
Yes, it's very much so.
In only 8 to 10 years. But well, now let's dive into the topic. First of all, why do healthcare organizations need to be concerned with electronic discovery?
Well, I think beyond the average email type of discovery or other types of investigations that they might have, what's happening across the country is with President Obama's Reinvestment and Recovery Act and a few other things that have been passed here just in the last few months. Outside the Veterans Administration system, there's only a few other major implementations of electronic health records. The vast majority of healthcare transactions in the U.S. are still taking place on paper, and it's been that way pretty much since the 50s. But the president has declared that electronic health records will reduce error rates, reduce long-term costs of healthcare, and create jobs. This was just in February when he made his primetime press briefing that he had stated this. In his joint address to Congress shortly thereafter, he had stated that our recovery plan will invest in electronic health records and new technology that will reduce errors, bring down costs, ensure privacy, and save lives. So apparently this is going to do everything that we ever wanted it to, according to the president. So what followed quickly was the passage of the American Reinvestment Recovery Act. It was signed February 17th, and it included $19.2 billion in provisions for healthcare information technology. The act is intended to accelerate the adoption and use of certified electronic health record technology during the next several years. And in fact, there is an incentive, if you will, that if professionals and hospitals fail to implement this electronic health record technology by the year 2014, they stand to suffer reductions in Medicare reimbursements. So this is serious business, and hospitals and healthcare organizations alike are going to have to start going the way of electronic information and get away from their paper-based records. The healthcare industry, interestingly enough, spends only 2% of its gross revenues on healthcare information technology, which is really quite small compared to other information intensive industries such as finance, who spend close to 10%. So the next 5 years certainly will be interesting as healthcare organizations balance competing priorities between lowering their healthcare costs, complying with mandates to adopt electronic health records, managing patient privacy under HIPAA, and forthcoming high-tech act that becomes effective early next year, while continuing to answer complex electronic discovery requests amid all this change.
Yeah, I remember being a finalist for an Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year back in about 2002 with a guy who didn't win it either that year, who was had a company that this is what he did. And we met afterwards, sort of like consolation drink, you know. Both, and after talking to him, I really didn't feel like I deserved to win because I was just staffing big projects. He was involved right in this field, and all of the potential for the medical field to really become a lot more uniform in the delivery of care and cut down errors through electronic record management was what he focused on. And it was a very compelling case. So I can understand why President Obama is so interested and why it continues to grow. What is electronic records management? I think we might have some people that listen to this that aren't that familiar. So,
Electronic records management starts with basic records management in that businesses need to maintain evidence and information about their activities and transactions in the form of records. So businesses create records, and those records need to be maintained. They need to be controlled from their creation through their receipt, maintenance, use, disposition, etc. And this naturally reaches into electronic records. It's not just focused on paper-based records. So any information that certifies the transaction or the nature of the business or decisions or policies, all these records need to be maintained by the organization. And there's a whole discipline in a certifying body that goes around to make sure that records managers are well informed with current legislation, such as what's happening with the electronic healthcare records.
And again, another basic question about defining electronic discovery, and for the benefit of listeners that that know that sometimes these are very complicated topics, and we approach it the show at the high level. I'm doing the show on the theory that we're going to have a lot of people that haven't done a lot of e-discovery, be it in a hospital or be it a med mal lawyer or be it wherever. You know, this is a sort of virgin territory for a lot of people. So for those people, you know, what how would you define what is electronic discovery?
Well, certainly with information technologists, I think, you know, the college programs that turn out computer science majors and information systems managers, there's not a whole lot of emphasis on the records management or the potential for litigation discovery in the management of these databases and systems that businesses use. So, you know, we do very much come from a paper-based society, and we understand, you know, here's a piece of paper with a signature on it, and that's clearly a record. But 98% of most records and documents created in the world today start as electronic format. And e-discovery is the natural progression of that, in that any record that a company has that is potentially responsive or relevant to a litigation claim is ripe for discovery, which means it needs to be produced to the other side. And because there's now so much more information than there used to be, instead of two or three boxes, we now have gigabytes and terabytes of data to get through. A lot of what the discovery is requiring is for that information to be handed over in electronic format. And that format needs to be in a somewhat openly universally accessible format. So if we have proprietary databases that have Unix code or an Oracle backend, it's not sufficient to just hand over that type of database to the other side. It needs to be put in a generic format that can be consumed by the other side so that they can go about proving their case or defending their case, depending on which side of the fence you're on.
Okay. And so, you know, what do you think are the greatest risks facing healthcare organizations with electronic records management?
Well, many of the systems used by healthcare organizations are complex proprietary systems. They're not designed specifically for a narrowly focused business use. So, for instance, if you go to your local hospital and you go into the radiology department, many of those films and x-rays that they do now are digital. And the system that manages the patient information as well as the images is very specific to that department and its function. Many times those systems don't speak universally across the entire organization or hospital. So you might have a data collection, data management system in radiology, but then the lab department would have its, a wholly separate system. What may be universal across those departments is the billing and reimbursement, but the actual information, which is oftentimes what is being requested in litigation, is a proprietary system that makes it a little bit more complicated to get at that information. So they don't facilitate, these systems don't facilitate proactive data retention or deletion purge policies. They often become just containers for information. And applying a records retention policy, such as this record is related to a patient and it needs to be kept either somewhere between 25 and 100 years, who's pressing the button at that time when it no longer needs to be retained? So what happens is a lot of times these things are just kept indefinitely. It's an open-ended or a forever mindset. It's too complicated to manage. I guess we'll just keep it because space is cheap. Or the data is purged programmatically. We just lop off the oldest content whenever the database gets full. Either way, that's a very risky position. Specifically when you look at regulations and other policies that might dictate otherwise.
It sounds like there's a lot of complexity there. And in a lot of ways, it sounds like your first project when you mentioned sort of the GroupWise project, where how do you deal with a system that's sort of complex and not built to produce information?
And email systems are very much a subtopic of their own. They've become such a primary focus of how we communicate in business, and it's our primary communication channel. And oftentimes, that's where much of our business documentation and records reside. And if you think about how you manage your email inbox, there's many documents, there's to and from exchanges. However, you're the only one that has access to that, which puts you in the hot seat for having to manage records retention around that. So email systems in particular have become problematic from a records management standpoint just from the decision around, is this truly a business record? And if so, then what's the retention period? Or is this truly transitory data in that it's just conversations back and forth and can be deleted every 90 days?
So we talked a bit about records management risks, e-discovery risks that healthcare organizations are facing.
Oh, sure. It builds right on the records management risks as well. The implementation of a legal hold is equally difficult to manage. Records retention and deletion policies are difficult to manage, so much so would be a legal hold. Mistakes made with records retention often go unnoticed. Unless litigation or government investigation ensues, then it's too late. But if you mess up a legal hold, if it's been issued, there are very real and potentially expensive ramifications for that. It's not a defense that an information system isn't designed to facilitate a legal hold. It simply must be done. And search and retrieval, or the segregation of only the relevant data from the overwhelming volume of data, can raise patient privacy issues in the hospital setting. If a healthcare information technology department has made over those hurdles, there's still the usable format question when handing the data over to the other side. You know, plaintiffs are unlikely to have the same XYZ medical record management program being used by the healthcare organization. Other risks include legal hold notices just simply being misunderstood by the IT personnel who press the buttons. You know, I don't know how many times at my time at Lilly we'd send out a legal hold notice and we'd get the calls, did you really mean you wanted us to keep everything? Or did you really mean you wanted us to stop rotating backup tapes? And certainly, the follow-up counsel is important in that scenario, but that is certainly a risk, and knowing about it, then you're able to manage it proactively. And then finally, I think, systems that have these automated scripts that purge data, backup tapes is one of those where it just automatically is recycling the tapes and overwriting old data. There are many other systems that have purge scripts that when a legal hold is issued, those things need to be taken into consideration and guidance needs to be very specific about which, if any of those, need to be suspended or halted indefinitely.
Yeah, I'd just like to mention two previous podcasts that might be relevant to some of those issues. We did a really good podcast on legal holds with John Jablonski, who's got a blog specifically on the topic of legal holds, and he's written a book for ARMA on that topic that just came out. Very complex area, and it's oftentimes where some of the bigger mistakes are made because once the evidence is gone, boy, you're in big trouble. The second one is, while there may not be a lot of great information out there on HIPAA, there's a pretty vast body of information on international e-discovery, which has, I think, similar privacy, quagmires that you can step into. Big concern of privacy and foreign jurisdictions and how you deal with that. And Jim Daly gave a really good podcast on that. But I guess there are a lot of unanswered questions in that area for e-discovery.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, you don't have to look far in the case law to see examples, very costly examples of folks who didn't quite do it right. And, again, that's what makes this area so risky.
Well, why is wholesale retention not a viable records retention policy?
Well,
keep it all. It's cheap.
Yeah. Number one, even though data storage is relatively inexpensive, I think you can get a terabyte external hard drive for just a little over $100 now. I mean, that was unheard of just a few years ago. But that doesn't mean we should just keep everything because it doesn't cost anything from a hardware perspective to maintain that data. The data stores increase, the operational performance of those systems often decrease. Storage may be able to handle that amount of data, but many of these systems aren't built to go on in perpetuity. so maintaining outdated legacy systems even. So if you think about how some of these systems grow and develop and change, how many times do we have a new operating system from Microsoft? You know, sometimes your documents or your data migrate forward into these new versions fine, and sometimes they don't. So at what point do old systems have to be maintained to make the accessibility of that data still a possibility? But the main risk here is the more data you have on hand when the litigation request comes in, the more the lawyers have to get through all of that material just to find what's relevant. And certainly if there are records retention policies to the contrary that say certain pieces of data should have been disposed of, now that there's a legal hold, that absolutely must be retained. A legal hold preempts any records retention policy.
Well, how can healthcare organizations safely dispose of data in complex information environments?
Well, I don't think healthcare organizations are unique in dealing with this issue. It is a very complex business issue that, to my knowledge, has not been easily solved. I think the software industry is really starting to look at this and understand that businesses use data to drive their business, and they need appropriate tools that can help them do that. Tools that can traverse disparate data systems and automate a records management policy. That's truly the best possible solution. The personnel-based approach is often what companies deal with. It's not as realistic to implement and certainly more difficult to enforce. You know, we already have overworked employees, and then we ask them to do this one extra job like keep your email box clean and delete stuff that shouldn't be kept more than 30 days. You know, it's just unreasonable to assume this. The employees can assume this additional burden. You know, but automation alone can't make the complex legal calls required, and I think that's where the challenge comes in trying to find a technology solution to something that really requires a human brain to be able to make a decision about a given record and whether or not it should be retained. So, you know, the place to start is having a records manager and a retention policy. That's, you know, the best place you can start, and then, you know, start looking at what's the best way to manage your information through a blended approach.
What advice would you give to healthcare organizations considering implementing an ERM system?
Well, my advice, and much of this comes from experience, experience is often the best teacher, is to start with an interdisciplinary team. It's important to have business subject matter experts, your compliance, records management, and legal folks at the table, as well as your IT. If any one of those organizations tries to develop or implement an electronic records management program independently, they will miss out on the requirements of these other parties. But once you have all those folks at the table, developing detailed system requirements. Before you even start looking at what's out on the marketplace, figure out what it is you need for your organization. Sadly, software vendors, or happily for them certainly, they can be very persuasive when it comes to demonstrating their bells and whistles and convincing you that you couldn't possibly live another day without purchasing all of them. So it's important to go into it with an objectivity, knowing what it is you're searching for. And then research the marketplace and benchmark with peer organizations. You know, don't purchase in a vacuum. See what other folks are doing, what their experiences have been. And once you come to the point of selecting a vendor, follow up on any they've offered folks that will give feedback on how their product works, and certainly take them up on that and do your own research as well. It's invaluable.
Yeah, this is one space where I think even competing organizations, and medicine's a little better in that a lot of it's geographical, you know, wherever you have a hospital, some specialists aside, but even just in general business, collaborating in e-discovery and sharing what works and what doesn't, it's sort of a plague that everyone's dealing with, and this is part of the way to solve the problem. No doubt, experience and mistakes are the best teachers.
If we share all of our experiences and mistakes with each other, then you know we all benefit from that. Certainly, if there's antitrust concerns, we know about that that tall wall and how to avoid it. But, you know, reinventing the wheel can be so timely and expensive, and there's no guarantee of success at the end. So certainly sharing experiences gets there a little bit quicker.
Karen, I've wanted to do a show where I have on some of my friends, some of the experts around the country, just talk about mistakes they've made. And I know from a marketing perspective, no one's going to do this, but everyone has.
It'd be a New York bestseller, I tell you. Folks would buy it in droves. What not to do.
Yes. Okay. Well, you know, what are some common pitfalls with e-discovery that can be avoided? And you can talk about what you've heard from other people.
Sure. Lack of knowledge, I think, right now. There was an interesting comic out there on Case Central recently that, you know, was poking fun at vendors who come out and basically are proclaiming the apocalypse with e-discovery and putting the fear into, you know, average IT people. So, you know, I'm not here to say it's the end of the world, you know, gloom and doom, there's no hope. But it is certainly a very complex and overwhelming area to be unfortunately put in the middle of when you receive an electronic discovery request. So lack of knowledge, now is the time. If you don't have one of those messy discovery requests in your lap, now is the time to educate yourself. There's plenty of information in the public domain, such as this podcast and many other articles and blogs and things that are out there regarding e-discovery. You know, unlike 10 years ago when the internet was still just a novelty, can learn the lingo and consider perhaps retaining a knowledgeable consultant if you feel like you want to do some proactive work at, you know, this early on. But lack of knowledge really, I think, is just the biggest pitfall. You don't know what you don't know. So better call somebody sooner rather than later and find out before, you know, as the example with data, you know, just sort of disappearing off the server because that script's still running and we didn't know we needed to stop it. Lack of preparedness. You know, a couple years ago, especially when the rules had changed in 2006, it had been all about data mapping. And even last year, there was a good bit of buzz in many of the articles and the blogs about, you know, companies need to have data maps. You know, my philosophy has been, I don't know how much detail you need to have in a data map, but at the very least, you need to know where your core data lives and how difficult a system that might be. That information will help legal teams when it comes time to do electronic discovery to strategize and to be able to work up, you know, what their approach will be when it comes to issuing legal holds or actually going down and collecting data and trying to produce it.
Yeah, Lee Weber did a really nice podcast with me on top 10 issues for in-house people, and he had some very interesting ideas on data mapping and how to sort of streamline the approach instead of creating a static document, which changes.
Is,
changes
exactly.
The
data
day after
living.
You finish it.
That is exactly the difficulty or the challenge in doing a data map is as soon as you've mapped it, it's all changed.
And now with all that stimulus out there, you know, especially targeting the healthcare industry, you know, it's going to be changing. So it's,
it will be changing very rapidly.
Well, where do you see the future of ERM for healthcare organizations going forward? We'll just look in the crystal ball for these next two questions.
Okay. And this is my opinion solely from Karen Roberts. I don't claim to have any knowledge or inside information, obviously. But, you know, just from my experience, I see email being, you know, becoming more of a target. And as I you know, talked about a little bit earlier, it's just one of those areas that is easily forgotten when it comes to IT and putting in some sort of data management or records management type program. You know, other communication mediums, if there's instant messaging or some of those other types of text-based communications, those are all just fertile grounds for electronic discovery. Forcing the issue strongly, certainly. Billing and reimbursement data systems, these are often very difficult to do discovery from, but, you know, with Stark and some of these other investigations that come across, these are the systems that get asked for over and and over. And, so I see those requests increasing here in the near term. What else? Patient data, certainly with the electronic health records, as these systems start coming online. The data protection statutes, I think, will create an interesting tension there between trying to put into electronic format all of this information and balance that against the privacy requirements that are also part and parcel of those records. So the more data you have in a big database, it will become a challenge to just focus on the one person's record and who's going to see everybody else's record, those type of things. So just, again, making sure that we're keeping the right amount of information for the right amount of time.
Before we talk about where you see the future of e-discovery, I have to add, I know where the future of e-discovery is going because I was in the Dominican Republic. And
oh, yeah.
The massage therapist that I negotiate a special rate with on the beach also could see the future. And I got some good – I asked her about e-discovery. And I'm not sharing it because – that's going to be competitive information for journals.
Did she even speak English?
Anyway, I may have her on a show.
Yeah.
Where you see the future. So
that should be a live show where we all get to go and participate.
Yeah. So with that in mind, knowing I'm having my expert from the Dominican Republic on next week, where do you see the future of e-discovery for healthcare organizations going?
Well, the e-discovery is become commonplace in employment law, antitrust law, mass tort litigation, construction, commercial litigation, family law, criminal law. Boy, that's where we get into some saucy stuff where you start reading about Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick up in Detroit and illicit affairs across his little texting device. So, you know, that's become commonplace. You can see those headlines just on your town newspaper. But medical malpractice attorneys, you know, the plaintiff's bar, they talk a lot about, you know, how can you stick it to the other side. They're accustomed to dealing with the interplay between medicine and law. You know, it isn't a stretch to say that, you know, more sophisticated requests are going to start hitting these healthcare organizations. And it's becoming more and more commonplace that I'm getting calls. We're a healthcare firm, and that's all we deal with is the requests that come and ask for every bit and bite and halt, you know, turning off computers even. Some of them get so crazy. So it's not that far off that these things will start to be more often than not. So, you know, and then balancing against that, of course, the HIPAA and privacy issues, the patient information, and how we're going to protect that information from the other side. Just because they requested all of this information doesn't mean they have a right to it. And with the High Tech Act that comes into effect early next year, all of those disclosures have to be tracked as well. So it will be interesting to see how that all plays out. So it's the Wild West out there, unfortunately, in the law, and nobody wants to be the first one to step their toe over the line and make a mistake. But, you know, as we talked about, there are several examples of making mistakes, but that doesn't mean that, you know, the folks that don't know any better and receive a bad request might just, you know, say, not argue against it, not knowing any better. So get knowledgeable now. Do your homework now.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, when you're talking there about, you know, some like the medical malpractice area becoming more in tune in this area, I think back to actually the first podcast I did with Judge Facciola, and he was, the whole topic was how every lawyer needs to become aware of this area or they're risking committing malpractice, because you can't be a vigilant advocate for your client when most evidence is electronic if you don't understand this area.
And Craig Ball, too, is just phenomenal at, you know, evangelizing this area as well and reminding lawyers that it's okay not to know everything about this area. It's okay. Just know when it's time to call somebody in who can help navigate these murky waters.
Yeah, the area hasn't been around that long, and I remember being at a very large conference in about 2005 where the large firm that was presenting saying they were national experts. I was sitting next to a partner I knew, and he said, yeah, we've handled two cases.
Well, that's two more than the guy next to him,
yeah.
I'm sure.
And they were experts. I mean, I'm not saying they weren't, but it's not that deep, and there aren't that many people that are really exceptionally strong experts with deep knowledge. So,
and so many of these companies, every company you walk into, even if they're in the same industry, can have very different information technology systems. So it very much is a matter of who your client is and what their systems are and what the requests are that have come from the other side.
Well, thank you for sharing some views into the Wild West and some predictions for medical-related e-discovery. I appreciated having you as a guest again and for a first-time show here with ESI Bytes, but I hope I can have you back on future shows.
Sure.
I'd like to let everyone know for a complete list of shows, you can visit www.esibytes.com. And remember to visit ESI Bytes to learn tips about electronic discovery and records management before ESI bites you back. This is Carl Schinneman from Chernov. Thanks again, and have a nice day.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
I'm trying to end the show. All right.